Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
Welcome into the playbook for a Tuesday on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook. You know what? It was great to at least have a couple of moments to chat with some of those UK Pats who were here for the game against Cleveland over the weekend. I am pleased to report, as I'm sure that you are very well aware of, that several of those guys now are undefeated in their sojourns westward across the pond, which is always great news to hear. I got to fix this. Hold on. I'm fixing. Fixing. There we go. See, that's much better this way. Because actually now I can hear since I'm deaf. So they were kind of messing around with the stuff here. There we go. See, now we're working much better. Felt like I was in a fog zone or something. Okay. Now, I know. Who knew, right? Exactly. By the way, how come we didn't use that as much this last week, I wonder? I don't know. I don't know why we didn't do that.
Not my call.
I know. Somebody's at the door, Kev. Things are all ready to go now. All right. So, but anyways, great to see the guys. Thank them for lunch and for their support of this team. And it's always great to share, you know, football stories, football memories. One of them, Mark, who was here just a short while ago, was telling me he's actually a Facebook friend and also a frequent contributor to the show from time to time. And he was telling me that, let's see, he has been to 14, 15 some odd games, somewhere around in that vicinity, I think it was, between the Red Sox, the Bruins, and the Patriots, and the Celtics. And he has only lost one game that he has been to. One game! And it was a Red Sox game, and he said they were playing the Blue Jays, and they had just clinched the division flag the night before. He says the Red Sox basically trotted out the Pawtucket Red Sox to play the next day, so he doesn't even count that one. And I said, well, you shouldn't count that one, because that's what they do. But, I mean, we should seriously give some consideration to getting these guys over here more often as a good luck charm, because at the very least, I mean, if every time they're here and we win, won't somebody pick up on that? Come on. Let's throw the guys a bone. Let's get them over across. Let them support us. Anyway, good to have them with us this weekend. I'm glad the Patriots could see fit to figuring out how to play the game of football in the last 2.5 minutes, I think, of the game on Sunday. Look, I got to tell you, I'm just as perplexed. I'm just as mystified. I'm just as confused, maybe, about this football team as you are. I've spent the better part of the last day and a half trying to figure it all out and see if I could come up with some rhyme or reason as to why things are happening the way that they are. It's very difficult to come up with just one or even two things that, you know, you could point to say, well, this is why the Patriots perform the way they do. That right now they simply are defying conventional wisdom and general football knowledge. They, for lack of a better phrase, have got some sunshine, you know, blowing up their skirts right now. And I suppose as a fan, it's infuriating. Believe me, it's not exactly easy as a member of the media or someone who works for the team either, when you try to have a reasonable expectation of what's going to happen. I know as a member of the media, you pretty much have your obituary for the game on Sunday ready to go. And then in the last 2.5 minutes, you got to rip it up. A whole day's worth of work, you rip it up because of the last 2.5 minutes of the game, you got to start all over. It's kind of what I had to do on Sunday. You know, I remember Coach Belichick actually apologizing to the media in jest, of course, post game. I think it may have been the Saints game earlier in the year, saying, sorry, you guys had to do your rewrites. You know, and I don't think anybody was really generally sorry that they had to do a rewrite. Fact of the matter is that this is just flat out an unpredictable team. This team is down by 12 points with 2:39 was just what the drive was, I think, left on the clock. They were still down by 12 points with just over a minute to play before they scored that touchdown and before the subsequent onside kick. They're still down. And yet they come back to win it. It's one of the strangest things, one of the most bizarre things, and I don't think anybody around here is going to look the gift horse in the mouth. It's you're going to take it, and you're going to try to move on. And hopefully, you can fix the problems. Now, I don't know what to make out of this. I guess you could take this in a negative sense as well as a positive sense, but as I'm sure the guys talked about a short while ago, the Patriots game against the Ravens week after this next has been moved out of the prime time. So the rematch of the past two AFC champions, and of course last year's Super Bowl champ in Baltimore, it was going to be the Sunday night game in Baltimore for 8:30, and they flexed it up. So it's now going to be a 4:25 Eastern time game on CBS, which isn't a bad thing for most of us, I think, at least around here. Probably a better thing for our UK Pats fans as well, because now they get a chance to see it, you know, in the primetime viewing hours and don't have to stay up until, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to watch a football game. I think the Bears and Eagles will take the place of the game in prime time, which actually probably makes more sense because you'll have a lot more playoff type implication riding on the outcome of the Bears Eagles game as you might as compared to the Ravens and Patriots. Now the Ravens are right there in the playoff hunt, clearly at 7-6 with the Dolphins, so it could be the Ravens playing for their playoff lives. We expect, depending upon what happens this week, that if the Patriots somehow win this week in Miami, and you notice that I'm hedging my bets already on this one, but if the Patriots somehow win this week in Miami, well, then they'll be the AFC East champion, and the game won't mean anything. So it sounds to me that's kind of what the television executives are looking at. That's what they're looking at. That this game will have more playoff implication overall than the Patriot-Ravens game. Or you could just simply say, well, you know what? The Ravens may be out of it, and the Patriots just aren't that good. Honestly, I could see where you could make that argument. And now that the Patriots don't have Rob Gronkowski put on IR late yesterday with the knee injury, I can understand why Patriots fans would say, many Patriots fans would say, all right, this is not a Super Bowl team any longer. I guess one of the questions I have to you is today, even before Gronk's injury, and again, remember now that this team, this Patriot team, did come back to win this game on Sunday against Cleveland without Gronk on the field. Okay? The other comeback wins were with Gronk on the field, with the exception of New Orleans. But in the last couple were with Gronk on the field. This one happened without Gronk on the field. So I tend to believe that it's really more than just Gronkowski and his presence. Although there's no question in my mind the Patriots will miss his presence. How can you not? He's the best tight end in the game. With all due respect to Jimmy Graham, who's very good, a couple of others that are out there, you can probably mention them. And yeah, they're all good in their own estimation. But Gronk has the ability and the size and the speed. He has it all. But the problem is that Gronk's style of play is what basically has him in the situation that he's in. He plays with reckless abandon, I guess, is about the best way you can phrase it. And the reckless abandon has gotten him into trouble with the arm, now with the knee. Although you could probably say that the arm was just a freak fall, at least originally, and the knee was just a wicked hit that was legislated by the NFL. I may get into that a little bit later. Suffice to say, though, that the comeback happened without Gronk on the field. Now, if you'll recall earlier in the game, Tom Brady, the same Tom Brady that we've criticized here on this program and in other places as well, for potentially being not the same TB12 that we've known and loved over the last few years. And if that game against Cleveland on Sunday was not a microcosm of exactly what I've been talking about, then you just don't get it. You're just not picking it up, and you're probably not going to pick it up. His passes in the first half in particular, how about 8 plays in the first quarter, okay? They ran 8 plays from scrimmage in the first quarter. Now, that's not ridiculous. That's not only ridiculous, that's pathetic. And a team that's a championship contending team, I don't care who you're playing. I don't care if you're playing, you know, Godzilla or the Little Sisters of the Poor. There's no way that you should just run eight plays in the first quarter if you're doing your job. Brady's throws were behind his receivers all day, and they were down at their feet, one or the other. Rarely was he on target. Rarely, when a completion was made, did the receiver not have to make a pretty good move to get the ball. And all of a sudden, when push comes to shove, and you're playing from behind, and it's now or never, do or die, how many of the cliches do I have to throw in here? Brady finally puts the team on his shoulders and leads him to the win. And then, of course, you do have to have, you know, you do have to have your fair share of sunshine blown up your skirt, so to speak, to be able to finish it off. You had to have the onside kick. You had to have a highly questionable pass interference call in the end zone, which did happen. I think we all realize that the more egregious error has to be, the more egregious error occurred at the end of the Carolina game as opposed to what happened to the Patriots at the end of the Cleveland game this weekend. Would we all agree on that point? See, I would. I actually thought that McFadden going for the ball, I think he was making a play for the ball. It just so happened that the receiver was also making a play for the ball. You could make the case, you could even make the case looking at it that the ball was not catchable. But there was contact made with both players going to the ball. And in this particular instance, to me, it really almost has to come down as a judgment decision on the call of the back judge. The Patriots were fortunate. They had the call go in their favor. And I actually thought Jerome Boger's crew, he was the lead official that day on Sunday, I thought the crew was highly inconsistent with their calls all day long. That was not a good day for that officiating crew. And unfortunately, the Patriots and the Browns were not the beneficiaries of perhaps the best game that could have been had by the officiating crew on Sunday.
It's also never good when you have a lead official repeatedly having to look up at his fingers to figure out what down it is when he's holding his hand.
Yeah, did you, somebody else notice that, huh?
That was like three or four times at least.
Yep, somebody else noticed that. I know that was noticed. So, you know, I guess, you know, everybody's allowed to have an off day. I guess everybody's allowed to, you know, have a down day. The Patriots, certainly you can make the case that they had one. Yes, they did. The officials also had one. Let me also, before we completely put, you know, the Cleveland Browns game to bed, let me also say that I thought Cleveland played outstandingly well. I thought for a guy that was, you know, not even really supposed to play in Jason Campbell, Patriots made him look like a friggin' all-pro. Now, I don't know. I think I'm going to be willing to give more of the credit to Campbell's ability than I am to the Patriots' defense for being unable to make a play against the guy. I think I'm going to kind of look at it that way because I really don't want to think about the Patriots' defense not being able to stop Jason Campbell, who only practiced really, what, a day and a half that last week? He wasn't even cleared to play officially or practice officially until Thursday. And he ends up starting the game. I'm going to chalk it up to here's a guy who's playing for a contract because he knows he's a short timer in Cleveland. That's what I'm going to chalk it up to. And I think there is something to that. I also think there's something to the fact that we saw Silver Salinga, you know, start in place of, you know, Isaac Sopoaga and in place of Joe Villano. Something to that. I think they felt like he could perhaps two-gap a little bit more and that the Patriots were going to try to two-gap a little bit more in an effort to let their linebackers come up and make plays like they used to behind Vince Wilfork. And so I think that's why they saw that. And while I thought they did an okay job against the run, not great, but an okay job, I also think it hurt their pass rush. So, you know, they didn't put near enough pressure until late in the game on Campbell, and I really thought that that would be one way to rattle him. But I think we all saw that Campbell's still very capable playing quarterback in the NFL, and that, it, you know, if he doesn't get a start if he doesn't get a chance or a shot to start somewhere, I would be all in favor of bringing Campbell in as a backup. And that's with all due respect to, you know, what's the name of our backup quarterback again?
Ryan Mallett.
Okay, I knew that, but I was just trying to make a point. With all due respect to Ryan, I thought you were having a senior
moment.
No, no. Sorry. Well, I have had those. In fact, I had one today, and that'll be another story for another day.
My mom always tells me, sorry, son.
Yeah,
having a senior moment.
Senior moment. But that was not a senior moment. That was just sort of a feeble attempt at humor. Jason Campbell makes somebody a very good quarterback. And I think you'd have to feel relatively certain that your team is going to be able to move the ball no matter who you are if your number one goes down. And considering the number of injuries that have occurred this year in the NFL that could be termed catastrophic, the Patriots are really one of the few teams in the NFL. That's me knocking on wood, by the way. Okay, reverse whammy. No jinx. That have not been hurt by this particular position being damaged. I just can't bring myself to say it. Can't do it. Don't want to do it. But, you know, just about every other team in the NFL has been touched by this at some point or another. Guy like Campbell should prove to be very, very valuable in the offseason. You know, I wouldn't have any problem seeing a guy like that with some ability to run and move and float the pocket and throw with some accuracy. Oh, and certainly it doesn't hurt to have a guy like Josh Gordon to throw to. My goodness. All you had to do is look at the 80-yarder that he caught against Tlaib, and you just went, wow. I mean, while we were probably all cursing under our breath, you had to just say, wow. Pulling away from Aqib Tlaib like he did, going across the grain on the field, was a feat of athletic excellence. I gained an entirely new perspective on Josh Gordon. And I think, like many of you, I know of him, you know, saw that he was a latecomer, saw that he had some ability, heard all the ruckus about him being, you know, oh, you got to go get this guy, you know, when the trade deadline was up earlier this year. And, you know, I have to admit, you know, because of the way that he came into the league, being a relative unknown quality, and he was taken in a supplemental draft, and he's had some problems in his past, you didn't really know what you had here. But now that you've seen him up close and personal, and I saw him up close and personal, I'm like, dude, this guy is a serious player with speed, physical play, hands. He's got it all. What a package. He's the closest thing to Larry Fitzgerald since Larry Fitzgerald, at least in my estimation. He might be better, and I know that might be blasphemous to some, but I'm going strictly on the age issue. So anyway, all Campbell had to do basically was throw it up there, and Gordon was going to go get it, and I think that's what the Browns were hoping that would happen, and that's exactly what did happen. And that opened up other facets of their offense. I mean, you had Jordan Cameron, who I thought had an outstanding game at tight end as well. You know, the Patriots were, you know, doing too much to, you know, I don't know where they were caught between a rock and a hard place trying to pick their poison on which receiver to double over and give help to. But it seemed like Cleveland was making the right choices at every stretch of the game, almost on every call. It was remarkable. Cleveland deserved to win the game. But the difference between teams who win and teams who don't is very, very small. The question that I actually have for you today, in addition to your nitpicks, and I hope the nitpicks come in hot and heavy, because obviously I've got my top three that I'm going to share with you. I'm going to share all my nitpicks with you here today. But because of that, I really am curious to kind of think a little bit about, are you going to be kidding me? Strippers just sent me an email that totally distracted me now.
Did you see Mac Brown?
Yeah.
That's what I was just going to interrupt you with.
Orange Blood's reporting Mac Brown is going to step down as Texas coach.
Yeah, it's on Twitter.
Wow. How about that? There's a part of me that's very, very sad, because I've said many times on this program, and I've put it up on my Facebook and Twitter feeds as well, that I respect Mac. I think he's done a tremendous job at the University of Texas. He's been a wonderful representative for the program, for the athletic department, for the school, for alums like me. But I thought that basically, you know, it was time for him to go after, 16 years or so.
Would they go 8-4 this year?
Yeah, they're 8-4.
I mean, it's not Texas, but it's not like they're going USC
look,
was, like
2-8. Since they were in the national championship game against Alabama, by the way, we do make a habit of digressing here on the program a lot, and so you have strippers to blame now for making
me. It's big news, though.
It is big news, especially if the rumors are still persistent that Nick Saban's going to jump from Alabama to take the job, which is I've heard more and more from the in the last couple of days, but I haven't paid any attention to the noise because Mac Brown was still in place. But if Orange Bloods is correct and Mac is stepping down, then you have to think that you know, there might be a $10 million price tag to pull him away from Alabama or somewhere in that vicinity, and that Alabama fans have probably run their championship coach out of town. And frankly, if I'm Nick Saban, I would think about this. And here's why I would think about it, Kev. Here's exactly why I would think about taking this job. I mean, you have nowhere to go but down at Alabama. You lost the game to Alabama. You did not get a chance to participate in the SEC championship game. So you have no way now, really, of defending. Obviously, no way now because the decision has been made. But you have no way of defending your national title. And everybody looks at it as a disappointment after winning, what, two of the last three and three overall? So there's no place to go but down. At Texas, you're in the Big 12, which arguably is not as strong from top to bottom as the SEC. I think inarguably it's not as strong as top to bottom. And right now, with only 10 teams in the conference, you do not have a de facto, you do not have a conference championship game. Texas and Baylor played that this last week, and it was a de facto game. It wasn't a technically championship game because you can't play that game off without 12 teams in your conference, a minimum of 12. So there's no conference championship game. You win the Big 12. If you go undefeated, you're going to be in the mix. You certainly would be in the four-team mix for the playoff, which at the Division I level starts next year. And let's say you go to Texas and you stay for 5, 6, 7, 10 years. How old is Nick Saban? He's about 60? He's late 50s, kind of like Coach Belichick, I think. I don't have his bio in front of me. But I think he's around Coach Belichick's age because I think they kind of came up together.
He's 62.
He's 62? All right, so let's say
he looks good for 62.
He does look great for 62.
He looks like he's 45.
He looks like he could easily be 10 to 15 years younger. I totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. So let's just say then, if he's 62, he goes in for 8 years. Let's coach him to 70. In that 8 years' time, and my guess would be he'll sign at least a minimum five-year deal. Probably more. Wouldn't surprise me to see him a 7-year deal with a rollover or something to age 70. And probably somewhere in the vicinity of $60 to $70 million if he does decide to go. Then if you can win two or three championships at Texas in that time, which they're bound to do because they keep, you know, recruiting all these classes. My big problem with Texas is they don't get enough glue guys. And their depth is woefully thin because they just don't have the backups to all of the superstars. Guys that are great players that you can coach into college players don't go to Texas because they see that there's no chance to play because they're going to play the superstars. They're going to play the 4- and 5-star kids. So they don't go to Texas. And kids who are 4- and 5-stars don't want to sit on the bench. I think you target a select number of 4- and 5-stars, and then you go out and you get kids who are willing to play and can matriculate and can grow and develop. And I think that's how you do it, and I think that's the one criticism you can make of Mac Brown and his staff at Texas. They over-recruited, and they just didn't have any cohesion on the team. Just my own opinion. Nick Saban could go in there and clean that up, take care of that, 3 or 4 years, win a couple of titles, and then finally retire as King of the Hill. It's a perfect scenario. And he'd get filthy rich, and he'd set up his kids and his kids' grandkids in terms of finances for the rest of the way. All right. Thank you, strippers, for allowing me to digress. You can all blame strippers on that one. All right. So let me reset it here. Let's start to get into nitpicks. I know you have them.
Your email's humming, by the way.
Is it humming? Okay, then I've got to...
I cleaned out some of the ones from the previous show and left over a few we didn't get to. But you also got a bunch of new ones that have just come in.
Okay, excellent. All right, so I got to get to those. I want to make sure that I reset the dial here, make sure that the social media accounts are up. So let's let you know, webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Nitpick number one for you. That's what I want to know. Nitpick number one. Couple other things we'll introduce as the show goes along, but let's get it started here. I know you've got them, so let's hear them, because it certainly was a game that, you know, wasn't without its tremendous fault. Webradio@patriots.com, the toll-free telephone number, 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, or hit us up on the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Find me on Twitter as well. It's easy. It's at JR Broadcaster. So hit me up on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. I'm getting close to the all too elusive 2K mark at JR Broadcaster. And then on Facebook, it's John.Rook. R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name. All right? I've got one that I'll share with you now to get the ball rolling. And then let's see where we go from here. But I have to believe that my number one nitpick for the game is Tom Brady. And I realize that there's going to be a certain faction of you that will probably kill me for this, and that's fine. But I tend to look at the bigger picture, and for the first, I thought, maybe 50 minutes of the game, he was miserable. It was like the Tom Brady we saw earlier in the year when he didn't have the weapons. And admittedly, you know, for much of the game, although he was lousy on Sunday, he did have his weapons in total, and that included Rob Gronkowski before he got hurt. But he was throwing behind guys, he's throwing down at the feet of guys, and this is stuff that was all happening earlier in the year. And so for those of you, and there have been many of you, who have written in to me and said, hey, how do you like Brady now, chump, in so many words, all I would simply ask you is did you see what I saw? Please explain it, because if I'm missing something and you're a quarterback expert, I'd really like to know what I'm missing. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. He clearly was off his mark. Tom Brady cannot afford to be off his mark for the remainder of this season now that he's down his most secret weapon, so to speak. And, of course, it's not a secret. I just kind of use that as a euphemism, but we all know that it's going to be infinitely harder. Cleveland, the one thing that Cleveland did not do is they did not adjust well enough to take Shane Vereen out of the contest. And obviously Vereen had a career day catching the football, setting all kinds of records for a Patriot running back in catches and in receiving yards. Teams will adjust to this now for the final, you know, weeks of the regular season and into the playoffs. Tom cannot afford to be off his game like he was for the first 50 minutes. Now, kudos again to Tom Terrific for straightening it out and putting points on the board late. And, of course, you know, hey, and I mean, you know, you're down 26-14, and you put 13 on the board in the last 61 seconds. Pretty flippin' amazing. So I will give him credit, certainly where credit is due, but he must also accept the blame for the previous 50 minutes in which he was completely and totally lousy. And knowing that, you know, he really can't, there's not any more wiggle room here, that the Patriots have suffered now catastrophic, in some instances, really injuries to this team's postseason chances for the long haul. I mean, think about it for a second. Wilfork down. Mayo down. Kelly down. Gronkowski down. How much more do we have to go here? Vollmer down. You've lost some huge, literally huge pieces to the puzzle here. So your depth is going to get taken. So the first nitpick has to go to Tom Brady, even though he's the one that led this team to the comeback. What are your thoughts? Agree? Disagree? Tell me where I'm wrong. Tell me where I'm right. What is your nitpick? 855-PATS-500, webradio@patriots.com. I got some other stuff to share inside the playbook, all coming up here on patriots.com radio in just a couple of moments.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown! Ha-ha!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest prices on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Hey guys, I never really got football, but ever since my parents switched to Verizon Fios, I'm a total expert. Fios internet is super fast, so I can stream football movies, download highlights.
Hey, sweetie, I need help with my fantasy lineup.
Dad, I'm doing my video blog.
Sorry.
Anyway, with Fios, the TV picture is crystal clear, so not now. Listen, Fios is 100% fiber optic, so everything's faster than ever, which leaves me time to do other things, like hanging that do not disturb sign on my door.
Upgrade your game this holiday season. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month guaranteed for the first year, plus a $300 holiday bonus with a two-year agreement. Visit gottogetfios.com today for America's fastest, most reliable internet. Technology that lets you rise to greatness. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by Metabank, member FDIC. Fios available in select areas. Limited time offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a two-year agreement and ends 1-18-14. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Hey guys, I never really got football, but ever since my parents switched to Verizon Fios, I'm a total expert. Fios internet is super fast, so I can stream football movies, download highlights.
Hey, sweetie, I need help with my fantasy lineup.
Dad, I'm doing my video blog.
Sorry.
Anyway, with Fios, the TV picture is crystal clear, so not now. Listen, Fios is 100% fiber optic, so everything's faster than ever, which leaves me time to do other things, like hanging that do not disturb sign on my door.
Upgrade your game this holiday season. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month guaranteed for the first year, plus a $300 holiday bonus with a two-year agreement. Visit gottogetfios.com today for America's fastest, most reliable internet. Technology that lets you rise to greatness. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank member FDIC. Fios available in select areas. Limited time offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a two-year agreement and ends 1/18/14. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too. Sucky, sucky, sucky. It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back inside the playbook on a Tuesday afternoon, Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. All right, so come on now. You got to have some problems, right? I realize a win is 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 a win. Team is 10-3. Still looking at the AFC East Championship. Three-game lead with 3 games to play. So they need to win one, or Miami needs to lose one. And the division title is theirs again. What is it? Year five in a row, I think. That's all good. It would be very difficult for them, I think, right now. Although, if they lost these last three in a row, and Miami won their last three, then you'd have perhaps potentially a problem. And you certainly wouldn't have a two seed, a bye in the opening round. So how important really now is the bye to you in your estimation? Should this be a win at all cost? I mean, frankly, Gronk isn't coming back this year. He may not come back for a whole calendar year. So really, does it benefit the Patriots to kind of, you know, pull the foot off the pedal a little bit and rest guys and rest players, or do they need to go out and get this bye? I mean, I'm kind of asking a philosophical question here. What would you like to see the Patriots do for these last 3 weeks? That has to be part of the equation today. 855-PATS-500, in addition to your nitpicks. Here's Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Hello, Big Al.
Hello there, I'm Rook. Hey, look, just to answer your question, I think you just keep playing, and you try to get that bye week. I think you try to get it every year if you can. So I expect the Pats will come out next week. I think they'll wrap up the division next week. And eventually, if Denver loses one, we got a shot at the number one overall seed. Never mind the bye week there, or the second seed, which would still be a bye.
Yeah, I don't think Denver's going to lose
the number one overall seed.
I don't think Denver's going to lose again, Al. I mean, as much I guess they could, just a sort of a gut instinct here. I don't think they're going to lose again. So in that regard, since you need help to drop them back into a tie, which, of course, you would win the tiebreaker,
right.
And frankly, I think Miami's going to be plenty motivated this week because they realize that, you know, not only could we still mathematically win this division, and it may very well be hard for us to do, but we can get into the playoffs, and they can get into the playoffs. They're right there neck and neck now with Baltimore.
Well, they can, and they're going to be motivated. But let me tell you something, John. Everybody rips the Jacksonville Jaguars for being, you know, this weak franchise. Do you know which team of the three teams in Florida has the best attendance this year?
Which team has the best attendance in Florida? No.
Teams in Florida.
Right now, I don't.
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Okay.
There will be 47 Dolphins fans in that stadium on next week.
All right, well,
plus or minus 50.
But
many Patriots fans.
But how does that affect the football team? I mean, really, how does that affect the football team?
I think it affects the football team a little bit.
How?
I think it affects the Dolphins.
It hasn't affected them in any of the last 5 or 6 years.
Well, I mean, are you saying it's been the same the last 5 or 6 years?
Largely. They haven't really been a contending team, but I mean, you know, I don't, now that they're a contending team, I think, you know, their fans, and again, this is someone looking at it from outside, but it seems to me their fans are, you know, hey, wake me up when they really mean something, type of fans, which is why most fans are. You're bandwagon fans. And until they prove that they are a winning commodity, that they actually have a chance to do something, I think they're going to reserve, going all out, especially in light of the whole, you know, Richie Incognito thing that happened.
Well, I understand, but look, even this year, when they've, the Dolphins, I think at one time this year were what, 3-1, 4-1, so they got off to a pretty good start.
Yeah,
and they were coming home. I forget who it was. They played a home game. It was on local television down here, so I remember it. They had a home game. I think it was in the division, either against the Bills or the Jets. Something like that, and it was on local cable, and I kind of surfed over to it to check it out. And, you know, it was like a funeral. There was close friends and relatives in the stands.
Yeah, well.
This is when they were riding. They were actually, at the beginning of the season, having a good record, having a big game at home. And, you know, you can say, well, the fans are waiting for something good. This was something good. And still, nobody showed up. I'm telling you, John, there's going to be about 47 Dolphins fans in that stadium on Sunday. The Patriots fans will outnumber the Dolphins fans.
That's great, but I think you know as well as I do that, honestly, that really doesn't have that much effect on how the team performs. Bottom line is that Miami is on the outside looking in, even though they've got the same record as Baltimore. They're 7-6, but they had a loss to the Ravens earlier this year, as I know you're aware.
Right.
So that right now puts them on the outside, so they know that a loss to the Patriots is the death knell, not only for the division, but probably for the playoffs.
Well, I suppose. But, John, I just don't think they're that good.
I don't think they are either. But we didn't think Cleveland was any good either, Al. We didn't think Cleveland was any good, and look at what they did. Cleveland deserved to win that game on Sunday, and even you must admit that.
They played great. Look, we are right where we should be. We probably stole two games against the Saints and the Browns at home. And we probably had a couple of, I thought the Carolina call was the right call at the end of that game, but the game at the Jets and the game at Carolina, if you buy those games as being bad refereeing at the end, then maybe those are two that went the other way. So they kind of balance out.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Patriots are right where they should be. And yes, we did struggle at home against the Saints and the Browns. The Browns, particularly, you think, you know, they're not very good, and they're working on their eighth quarterback or something. And so you'd like to think that there'd be a better effort. But I will say this for the Browns. That receiver they've got is a beast. He is a beast. And if anybody that I was disappointed in on the Patriots on Sunday, as far as a nitpick, would be Aqib Talib. He just had a very, very rough day. Now, he might have been up against something that was hard to handle, but I thought he had a very poor game. I hope he has a better game this week, because it could be a strife. He has to cover the Wallace kid this week, you know, and he's pretty good too, and we might have in for a long day. But that kid on the Browns is just a special player. He looks like, he's sort of like Terrell Owens, except you know, a little bit more squared away, you know, from the neck up.
Yeah, he's tough. He's really tough.
He's got
a unique blend of strength and speed that's rare in an NFL receiver. You can probably count the guys that have that kind of strength and speed on one hand, and you can start and end maybe with Megatron and Larry Fitzgerald, and that's about it. He could very well find himself in that kind of a classification. The only reason that he's not right now is because Cleveland stinks overall.
You know, I agree. And like I say, it's a revolving door quarterback, and that's got to be tough on the receivers. But look, I think the Pats are going to run the table here. I think we are so motivated to beat the Ravens. I think we're going to beat them. And all Denver has to do is lose once. I know that they've got an easier schedule. But it would have been good if they lost at Kansas City. But if you do buy into this Peyton Manning, you know, in cold weather thing, then, you know, he's going to probably have a game or two down the stretch here where it's lousy weather.
Yeah.
It's windy and freezing and sleet or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they get beat by somebody that they shouldn't lose to. All they got to do is lose once.
Yeah.
I think we're going to run the table.
Well, I hope that you are – I hope, you know, as a fan, that you're correct where that assumption is coming from. But I'm telling you that, you know, this week and especially next week with the Ravens, those are the likely pratfalls, as I think you know. And that's not completely to discredit the Bills, but I'm just saying that I'm not so sure that and frankly, if there's absolutely nothing to play for in that last week, you know, that's happened mm-hmm. in the past. That, you know, a team, you know, if you can't win or lose or improve your standing in the playoffs, you know, whether you win or you lose,
right.
I wouldn't expect that Buffalo game to be a walk in the park either. So just keep that in mind.
Well, there you go. And I think I mentioned that to you last week. I think Spiller is a great back. And, you know, we don't know what the game's going to mean, you know, at this point.
Well, it's just way too early. Way too early.
It is.
So did we talk about your nitpick for this week?
Well, I said Tlaib, I thought, had an awful game.
Okay.
And so I hope he improves this week. Now, Gronk, let me make one comment about Gronk.
Let me say this very quickly about Tlaib's game, though. Against Josh Gordon, as you already put out there, Gordon made him look bad in a couple of instances, especially in the 80-yarder.
He did.
Okay.
It's hard to imagine Tlaib being just so overmatched, but he didn't have a chance.
Well, you saw what happens when you don't have help over the top, or your help over the top actually bit on a play fake. So all I'm saying is they were not in the right position on that play.
There you go. Okay. Well, fair enough. But look, let me make a comment about Gronk, and I'll let you run.
Okay.
But I think what you're seeing with Gronk is that it's sort of like the good news is he's a big target, and the bad news is he's a big target.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true.
And,
that's true. You're right about that.
You know, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I do not like the phrase injury prone. I don't like that. I think these guys go out and play hard and sometimes you get hurt. I don't think anybody is prone to injury. I think you may be prone to drop passes. You might be prone to miss blocks. You might be prone to overthrow receivers. You might be prone to do a lot of things in football, but I don't know how you're prone to be injured. I think there's nothing that Gronk could have done.
No, probably not.
On that play.
But I would tell you that Gronk doesn't put himself in a position necessarily to be protective because he's just got that hell-bent, you know, never say die attitude. And I said earlier, he plays with a reckless abandon that few athletes can do. And that's because he's a big, strong, tough guy. And he's just, you know, he has no fear in him like most, you know, 24-year-olds have no fear in them. So when you combine the two, you're going to leave yourself open to opportunities. Now, even on the hit that occurred, the TJ Ward put on his knee, I don't think there's any way that he's going to avoid that. That's just going to happen in football. But I'm saying overall, you know, he's a guy that's probably leaving himself out there to be somewhat prone to injuries because of his style of play. Keep in mind now that he was as low a draft pick as he was, Al, because he had back problems at the University of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So he was already.
He probably has not been.
He was already somewhat.
Has not been totally healthy.
No.
Since high school.
No, and that's part of what the back surgery was in the last year, correcting problems that he's been nagging him for a long time. So he already was kind of, you know, damaged goods when he arrived in the NFL. So you just have to take all these things into consideration and realize that his style of play is not going to be conducive to a long shelf life in this NFL. 20 or 30 years ago, maybe.
He's sort of like, what's a weird comparison, but I think the Boston sports fans, I think, would get this. He's sort of like Bobby Orr. You know, Bobby Orr used to say, because he was injured a lot.
Yeah, I'd say he's more like Cam Neely, if you're going to use that comparison.
All right. Well, they both might say, I know I heard Orr say this, and maybe Neely would say the same thing. Or would just say, well, you know, I carry the puck a lot, and if you carry the puck,
you're going to get hit. Yeah, that's true. That's also true. Yeah,
and that's kind of the way Gronk is. I mean, Gronk, he catches the ball over the middle in traffic a lot, and he's probably had these dudes, you know, nailing them since he was in 11th grade.
No question.
Just, at some point, the rubber band just snaps. I mean, you just, even if you're Gronk and you think you're this indestructible Sherman tank of a,
it's of true.
A tight end.
You're right.
The Bears going to get you.
Yep.
And there's nothing nothing he could have done, I don't think, on Sunday to prevent that. He picked his head up. He's looking downfield. He's made the catch. And I don't know where this guy comes in. And I guess you can't blame him anymore either.
No, you can't. And that,
these guys go for the knee because they're afraid to go above. He's been fined a bunch of times, and
that's
he doesn't
right.
want to go above the neck.
That's right.
So
you're right.
Know, what do you do? I guess
you're right. All right, Al. Thank you. Talk to you soon,
take
buddy.
Take care, John.
Yeah,
we'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. You
later.
Will. Okay. All right. Thanks. Good. He leads me right into what else I was going to talk.
By the
about.
Way, I just wrote myself a note. If you see me scribbling back here, I gotta get a drop of Al. At about the 48-minute mark today, saying he's had dudes nailing him since he was in seventh grade. I didn't want to interrupt your vibe because you were very serious looking over there.
But I always get serious looking when we're talking football.
But I just like, I was like,
dude, it's great. Nailing him. is Andy rubbing off on you, Kev?
I don't know. I just, these little things, I'm just sort of like, I'm multitasking, I'm answering the phone, I'm doing stuff, and those things just somehow just like stick out to me.
I get it.
Al was like that, you know, the phone in like the Peanuts?
Yeah.
And wah, 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 wah. Yeah, it was that, and then it was, he's had dudes nailing him since seventh grade. I just couldn't take it.
Okay. Fair enough. See, now you got me distracted again. Thank you. The issue that Al was talking about over, Ward hitting him low, taking the knee out, whatever. I mentioned this earlier, and I'll go ahead and bring it up now since we're kind of on that train of thought. And I'd love to get your opinion on this because I don't really know that there's anything that can be done. But you could blame the National Football League as much for Gronk's injury as you could T.J. Ward. Fact of the matter is that guys used to aim right around the midsection. I think that's generally what you were instructed to do. I know when I played football decades, eons ago, that we were always told to, you know, look at a guy between the two and the three, as the saying goes, between the numbers and aim right there. And even now today, that's considered, could be construed as being too high a hit. So, because the NFL is legislating against high hits, guys are purposely going low. They're targeting ankles and knees, and guys are going to have their careers ruined by that, just like they're going to have their bells rung. And just, you know, I don't know that there's an answer here, guys. I really don't know that there's an answer, but I lay the blame on Rob Gronkowski and anybody else who gets their knee taken out like that. I lay the blame firmly on the feet of the NFL. They've done so much to legislate trying to keep quarterbacks healthy or healthier and star players in the games longer. Has it worked? Has it worked? I'm serious with this question. It's not rhetorical. I'm serious. Has it worked? Somebody please answer that question for me, because I don't see it, and if I'm missing something, then I need somebody to wake me up and show me. I haven't seen it. And so now what the NFL has done, they've tried to legislate, you know, the relative health of quarterbacks. They're still getting killed for the most part out there. And so now they're legislating targeting by defensive backs who can, you know, no longer can launch themselves. But frankly, I think that's what we've always done, is we've seen defensive backs launch themselves. You just can't use the helmet as a missile tip. And in effect, that's kind of what happened. That's kind of what happened. That's what Ward did. He launched himself. And he took out Gronk's knee, and it looked ugly. It looked kind of like, and I heard this analogy earlier on Sunday, it looked kind of like what happened to Willis McGahee and his knee hit from years ago. So, I think, you know, the prognosis would be fine for an eventual return. I personally believe, even though that, I know E. Scal and some others tweeted out there, geez, you know, it may be that Gronk's out for the entire 2014. Maybe it'd be better for him to get out and get completely healthy, what have you. I don't see that happening. Here's a guy who's a football lifer. I think we all know that. This guy loves playing football. He loves being around the sport of football. He's a rough and tumble and ready guy. I think we all know who Gronk is. It's why we love him as a player. It's why we, you know, love him as an individual, because there's no fake to him. He is exactly who he seems to be. And so I think he'll probably, you know, while he's certainly has every right to be bummed out by this, he may even be a little bit, you know, PO'd at T.J. Ward for targeting him. You know, and I saw the, you know, video freezes of Belichick's stare, what it looked like a stare at Ward coming off the field. I don't even think he was looking at T.J. Ward, frankly. I didn't see it, but, you know, we're all trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. Anyway, it's football. Football's a physical sport. Injuries are going to occur. That's just that. There's just no two ways around it. Rob will get over his initial disappointment. His hunger for the game and his hunger to be back on the field will grow. I think you'll see him do everything that Wes Welker did a couple of years ago to get back on the field as soon as possible. And it may not be for the start of the season, but I'd be stunned if he sat out the entire 2014 year. Stunned. Now, what's in his best interest may or may not be that, but he's going to have certainly plenty of time now to heal up his arm and heal up his back because he's working on that knee now. But he'll have had major surgery on his arm, his back, and his knee, and he's only been in the NFL how long? 4 seasons? Whew. You tell me what you think his shelf life is going to be now. Blame the NFL. They're the ones that have forced, you know, linebackers, defensive backs, defenders to go low because they don't want to be fined for going high. I'm not sure there's a fix. But if you have an idea as to how the league could fix this problem, I'm all ears today. Love to discuss it with you. 855-PATS-500. Here's Harley in North Carolina. Hey, Harley, you're in the playbook.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Good, man.
I wanted to say my biggest nitpick of the week is everyone saying that the Browns game was luck and the Patriots keep winning by luck. I just don't see 13-win seasons come from luck. And, I mean, you look at it, we had 2 bad calls that cost us the Jets in the Panthers game and 1 rainstorm away from winning the Cleveland game. I mean, we were driving at the end of the Cleveland game, but the Cincinnati game.
Mm-hmm.
We were one drive away from winning that game, and you know, you couldn't do a 2-minute offense in the rain the way that rain came down. I mean, I couldn't even see the screen on that game. But I mean, I think we're still one of the most dynamic teams in the league, and I'm going to work every day, and everybody's saying we got lucky, but I just don't see it.
Well, Harley, you have to realize that the team was lucky on Sunday. This Sunday they were lucky, whereas you know they might have outskilled Houston the week before and. And certainly Denver the week before that. Sunday's game was luck. There had to be a certain amount of luck involved. Cleveland had to make, you know, what, 1-2 significant bad plays, both of which were made by Cleveland. I mean, you're talking about tremendous odds to overcome here. Not only in the pass interference call, but certainly then, or before that, on the onside kick. By the way, let me add here, just that we're talking about it. I mean, I know we're talking nitpicks here. But I have to give tremendous credit and plaudits to the special teams for that onside kick because that was a thing of beauty. The play is called middle bunt. And all it is a little squib kick right up the middle where the kicker, and I've seen college teams actually run this now more than I've seen NFL teams. You just don't see an onside kick that often in the NFL anymore. Except for, you know, late in the game, like in this situation. But I've seen several college teams run this middle bunt play this year where the kicker actually shadows the ball. Of course, you're inviting now. If I'm defending this, and you know the onside kick is coming, you're asking for somebody on that opposing defensive line to come in and immediately smash your kicker in the mouth. So, you know, you can end up with a real problem there because that's what I'm doing. I'm taking the kicker out so I can have one of my other guys jump on the ball because that's what the Browns were actually trying to do. They just didn't take Steven Gostkowski out of the play. Fozzie Whitaker tried to make a play on the ball for Cleveland and could not do it because why? Because Gostkowski was in the way. That's why. And so it's still a calculated risk. It's still a gamble. But Cleveland decided to force their hand, tried to make a play, and didn't come up with it. But that'll get figured out eventually. It's really a very effective play, and to me, it's one of the most effective onside kick plays that I've ever seen. Okay, I digress, Harley. What else you got?
Well, I mean, it's like you're saying. You know, you can say it's luck, or you can say it's execution. I mean, if you put 20 of the 32 NFL teams in the same situation passed for this week, they wouldn't come out with a win. You know, it's execution regardless.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. You know what, Harley? I don't disagree with that at all. You're right. You put any other number of teams, save for maybe Denver, really, in that same situation, they're going to lose. they will lose. You're absolutely right about that. And so this is where Tom Brady and the Patriots deserve some credit, because they've been in this situation many, 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 many times before, probably way too many for our liking. But the fact of the matter is that they do figure out a way to pull themselves out of it, as Brady did again in this particular instance. And this in itself is what is going to make Tom Brady a Hall of Famer. He'd be in the Hall of Fame without the Super Bowl rings. He'd be just like Dan Marino, but he'd be in there without the Super Bowl rings because of his ability to win coming from behind, like we've seen time and time again for now well over 40 times in his career as a starting quarterback. So, yeah, I don't disagree with that. But, you know, we're trying to put this up on a different plane here and trying to separate this Patriots team right now from, they appear to be just another team, just one of a middle in the pack, you know, as opposed to being a championship contender, which their record says they are. I don't want to say they're a paper lion, because it's not really a paper lion, because they do have some talent and we've seen it. But you got to wonder where the point of diminishing returns begins. And if they're not careful, because of who they lost this week, namely Rob Gronkowski, it could start this week at Miami.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, I think we really got a chance this year to win. You know, coming into the year, a lot of people had a lot of doubts. And, you know, to me, I think I heard a PFW guy say earlier, it's been great watching this year, just all the games, how we've won them. But I think we got a chance. This is up to us. I mean, and how the playoffs play out, and who we play and where we play. But we got a chance, but if we keep getting off these slow starts, we're not going to be able to win a playoff game with a slow start.
Well, there's no doubt about that, especially if you're going on the road, you know, and you're playing, say, a Denver or someone like that. And frankly, I wouldn't like the Patriots' chances going on the road to play, say, a Baltimore, although it doesn't look like that's going to happen, even though they're going to get the Ravens in the regular season. Doesn't look like that would happen in the playoffs, just because of the way the two teams are aligned divisionally and where the records are. So, you know, Denver is the only one that worries me right now, and I know that there's probably a certain faction of people that would say, well, Denver doesn't worry me at all, because they're kind of in Peyton Manning's head. And you know what? They actually might be. And I think the rougher the weather, the better. This would be the year, not only because, you know, the window on Brady's, you know, chances to win rings is still continuing to drop, which has been a season-long nitpick, if you will, that many of us have had here. And that, you know, we didn't think that, you know, and I was one of those that didn't think this team built itself up enough around to support Tom Brady accurately before the season began. But I will tell you this, that I would like the Patriots' chances in a cold weather climb like MetLife Stadium for the Super Bowl against an NFC team this year. I definitely would like their chances. And the rougher the weather, the better. I hope for snow. If the Patriots are going to win the AFC title, I would hope for snow. I would hope for bitter cold. I would hope for high winds, because then it just levels the playing field out. And you know what happens when the Patriots are in close games. More often than not, what do, Harley?
They pull it out.
Yeah, exactly.
What are the chances of us playing Kansas City in the playoffs? I mean, that's a team that scares me. I mean,
Kansas City—we've
lost this year.
Kansas City right now, they can't do any better than the 5 seed. So, what you'd have to have happen here? Let's just say, for argument's sake, right now, Denver's the 1. The Patriots get the 2. If they manage to win here and they win out, they're going to get the 2. Then you'd put, let's just say, Cincinnati at 3 and Indianapolis at 4. Because Cincinnati has the head-to-head there. So even if they end up with the same record, since he would be 3-4, then you'd have Kansas City at the 5, and you'd have Baltimore. If the playoffs were to start today, Baltimore would be the 6. So you'd have 1 and 2 get the byes. You would have 3 playing 6, and you'd have 4 playing 5. So Kansas City would play at Indianapolis in the first game. And let's just say Kansas City wins that game, which they certainly could. Then the lowest remaining seed would end up playing at Denver. So if Kansas City wins and Baltimore loses, then it would be Kansas City at Denver in the divisional round. And then I could see something happen. Even though Denver beat them twice, I could see Kansas City potentially in a playoff, possibly pulling that off. I think they're probably good enough to do that. That's just a scenario, one of many. Make sense?
Yes, sir. I mean, I feel like they got a front that scares me, and their offense is starting to pick it up a little bit. I mean, you've seen the points they put up this week. So.
The only thing is the only thing is that if that scenario unfolded and Kansas City did go into Denver and win, if you win, you're going to get the Chiefs here in Foxborough.
Which is better.
Yeah. for the AFC title. So it's not out of the question. Still a little bit of a long shot, but it's not out of the question. I would say you're probably likely to, if you get the first round bye as the two seed, you're probably going to face, in your first game, the survivor between, say, Cincinnati and Baltimore. That would be my guess right now. And that's how that would break down in the first game. And then obviously you'd get the Denver Kansas City winner in the second game. It's what you're looking at. At least you'd have the first game at home. And I think that would be important. So as long as we're going to look ahead, we might as well look ahead all the way. All right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good stuff, Harley. Thanks for the
thanks, sir. You have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for the phone call. Let's get to Andrew in Buffalo. Thanks for hanging on, Andrew. You're in the playbook.
How you doing, John?
I'm good, Andrew.
That's good. My next pick will be the defense. It wouldn't have mattered what that would have been playing for the Browns. We seem to always allow quarterbacks who are not really, you know, great, they always seem to look like rock stars against us. And I know we got some injuries and stuff, but it's just really frustrating, you know, that our defense can't seem to get after opposing quarterbacks, especially ones that, you know, that are not very good. Jason Campbell, if it was any other team, like maybe Miami, Buffalo, whoever, they would have got after him. I don't feel like we got enough pressure on them.
Hey, are you at the drive thru? Can I have a coffee with cream and two sugars?
yeah, I get that, please.
Make sure you ship it up here FedEx, will you? Sorry. Go ahead.
If you hear my son making noises, please excuse that.
No, no. It's all good here. It's all good here.
Yeah. But to keep the lead, I can't really say he's a dictator. He got injured. You know what I mean? He's not healthy. So I can't. That guy is a freaking nature. Josh Gordon, I can't blame a Keith to leave on that. I mean, yeah, to have a guy break away for 80 yards.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do? It's a hip injury. There's nothing you can do. Now, the only thing I can't say is if I give a nitpick on that, it will be the safety, because the safety is supposed to come down and help.
Yep.
I mean, where were they at? I mean, when you look at that replay, they was in the screen.
Yep. No, you just absolutely and positively, Andrew, you just hit on my second nitpick. Secondary, I was going to stay somewhat generic with it, but more specifically the safeties, because I thought they were out of position most of the afternoon. And I wasn't sure what they were trying to do. Were they trying to come over the top and help against Josh Gordon, or were they trying to come over the top and help against Jordan Cameron? And maybe they were trying to do a little bit of both, but it seemed like they were on the wrong page every time the other team made a big play.
So that's
why my other nitpick would have to be with the secondary, because I thought that they just largely had a poor game. They just had a poor game, and the Patriots are so incredibly fortunate to have won that game, because Cleveland outplayed them from start to finish, with the exception of that last 2:39.
Right, and I felt like they didn't even really run the ball on us. They was throwing that ball. That man had like what, over 400 yards? What did he have? 400 yards passing?
No, almost 400. He was just under it, and Brady was just over it.
Right, you're right. Yeah, so it's ridiculous. And you probably won't agree with this, but I know the league is sort of responsible. I know the league is sort of responsible for Elijah Kent on to the knee, but I got to put some of this blame on the coaches. I understand Brook is our special weapon. He is our only weapon, and the offense revolves around him. But the fact that we don't have a compliment and they're always having Gronk run the seam route, it seems like every time he snaps the ball, Gronk is running the seam route, and you see Brady, that's exactly where he wants to go. Even when he looks off the safety, what do? He throws right to Gronk in the seam, and I feel like safeties or like guys that play safeties, they come crashing down on Gronk.
Well, it's because – but hold on, Andrew. It's because that when he runs that seam route, it's usually with man coverage. And so if there's only one guy on him and usually behind him on the play, if Brady makes an accurate throw, Gronk's got a chance to run forever. It's where the safety in trying to recover on the play, and this is on the play that he got hurt, T.J. Ward came in from the other side. He was late arriving. And so he had to do whatever he could to put him on the ground. He aims low, and it just so happens his helmet met his knee, and goodbye season.
Right, yeah. You're definitely right about that. And there was nothing wrong to do. I mean, you could say, oh, he could fall, but, I mean, we don't want a guy falling after the catch. I mean, we want more yards. Anybody should want that. So I can't blame him. But there was times where I've seen, like, triple coverage where there was two linebackers, you know, sort of sandwiching for him, and then you see the safety up top.
Mm-hmm.
And Brady throws it, you know. So, yeah, I think having Hernandez out of the lineup, that does hurt us because Brady didn't have to feel the need to keep throwing it up there. You know, we have other guys that can complement Buck.
Yeah.
If Brady's brought in, he can't do it by himself. You know what I mean? And Amendola's banged up. Edelman is playing harder, but it's just, you know, these things happen. These injuries happen. But hopefully next week, we get after Miami. That's not going to be easy. That is going to be a very close game. That actually kind of scares me. You know, that's a team that can definitely beat us. But, yeah, thanks for taking my call, John.
I appreciate that. Hey, and thanks a whole lot. And your son's welcome on the program anytime, Andrew. Don't worry about that. So it's good stuff. All right, let's get a timeout here, and then I got a bunch of nitpicks that I got to read here. We got some good emails coming in, as Kevin suggested earlier. Got some Facebook posts, couple of tweets to read out as well. Don't forget, webradio at patriots.com. Hit the Twitter account, at JR Broadcaster. Facebook is John.Rook. And the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Toll free, it's 855-PATS-500. So where is your nitpick from Sunday? And overall, where's your nitpick with this team right now with three games left in the regular season? Can there be adjustments made to get this team through to the end, win a title, get a bye in the opening round? Or are you kind of like some of the fans I heard leaving the stadium here on Sunday? Oh, this is over. We're never going to win the Super Bowl now. Gronk is gone. How do you feel about that? Let's discuss coming up in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons, so I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets. With free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located
located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Hey guys, I never really got football, but ever since my parents switched to Verizon Fios, I'm a total expert. Fios internet is super fast, so I can stream football movies, download highlights.
Hey, sweetie, I need help with my fantasy lineup.
Dad, I'm doing my video blog.
Sorry.
Anyway, with Fios, the TV picture is crystal clear, so not now. Listen, Fios is 100% fiber optic, so everything's faster than ever, which leaves me time to do other things, like hanging that do not disturb sign on my door.
Upgrade your game this holiday season. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month guaranteed for the first year, plus a $300 holiday bonus with a two-year agreement. Visit gottogetfios.com today for America's fastest, most reliable internet. Technology that lets you rise to greatness. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by Metabank, member FDIC. Fios available in select areas. Limited time offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a two-year agreement and ends 1/18/14. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. You could thank the wussification of the National Football League for the inability to hit guys high. That this is the way safeties tackle people now. They go down, and he went right on the knee.
Ward came right in.
Ward's helmet right on Gronkowski's right knee and takes the knee out. You can thank the National Football League because this is the way they want their safeties to play. Because you can't hit guys high anymore. Because we all got to watch out for those head injuries that affect every single player, right? So now you can go and you can take guys' legs out.
Helmet right on the knee.
That is the Patriots radio broadcast. Scott Zolak. Bob Soshi talking about what happened to Rob Gronkowski on Sunday. And
you could hear the crowd react.
Oh, the crowd definitely reacted. Yeah. I was, hey, listen, where I was in my booth, you felt like, you know, you just stuck a pin in a balloon. The air just went out of the entire stadium at that very moment. And if you were here, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You heard the groan, and then when it was shown up on the replay board, you could hear the, oh, collectively from 68,000 people. And it just was not a pretty sight. I'm sure you probably did that yourself if you saw it on the replay, if you were watching on television, no matter where you are. It was just one of those, oh, that's not good. And you knew it wasn't going to be good. And this is where Scott Zolak is 110% correct. Blame the NFL. I'm in total agreement with him here on this one. Blame the NFL. They've legislated this game to the point now where really there's only one place for defenders to target, and that's below the waist. And often, you know, the knee being the halfway point between the waist and the ground, that's where the target's going to go. It's just, they're going to end up legislating this game right out of existence. I'm not sure that there's anything you can do about it. If there is something they can do about it, or if you have a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. I'm appealing to football fans. I'm appealing to football officials. I'm appealing to football players who all may be listening here. What can you do to fix this problem, to see this kind of catastrophic injury not occur? And my opinion is you can't do anything, because this is just the nature of the beast. This is football. It always has been this way, and we always shake our heads, and we always wince, and we always go, oh, every time we see something like that happen. And there's really nothing you can do about it. The league has tried to legislate relative health of quarterbacks to the point now where it's really become kind of ridiculous. Is there something else you can do about, you know, the game for the other skill position players? And see, I don't think that's the case. Aaron in Los Angeles says, John, my nitpick is the same one I've had for much of the season, is McDaniel's play calling. It's the same every week. In the first half, he calls mid to deeper throws, resulting in QB pressures, sacks, and three and outs. In the second half, he makes adjustments, goes to more screens, quick throws, and we move the ball. I feel his play calling is a big part of our very slow starts. That's a very good nitpick, Aaron, and I'd have to say that I think you're on to something. The challenge now is going to be to see how Josh McDaniels can, you know, basically not only play the Patriots out of their slow starts offensively, but now spread the ball around to enough targets where Gronk's absence isn't really noticeable. That may be very hard to do. It might even be impossible to do. But I happen to disagree. You got enough targets on this team, and then, you know, once a guy like Aaron Dobson certainly is healthier, because he hasn't been. I think we all saw, by the way, that Josh Boyce can catch the football. I know he dropped one on Sunday, but I think we all see that the kid does have some talent. I think the Patriots just need to have some faith in that talent. I mean, they certainly gave the benefit of the doubt to Dobson and Kimbrell Tompkins earlier in the season. So let's see Josh Boyce step up now. Let's see him targeted. Let's see how he can come through, because I think we've seen now that there is ability there, without a doubt. All right. Let me correct that. All right, there we go. There's Patrick in Brooklyn, New York. Patrick, you're in the playbook.
John, how you doing?
I'm good, Patrick.
Couple things, John. I think, you know, and I'm not siding with the NFL here, but I think they're between a rock and a hard place. And I'll tell you why I say that, John.
Okay.
So we have, you know, all these concussion issues. We have all these lawsuits, and every legal expert looking at, and every legal and medical expert looking at the entire NFL situation, and how the NFL, you know, discloses the risk of the game to the players, and, you know, if the NFL had done enough. So what the NFL did is what a lot of businesses do when things happen. They overreacted. And in overreacting, they began to legislate in a manner that literally forced a player that's going to put a hit on somebody to literally think from the waist down.
Mm-hmm.
The only possible thing that I could possibly see them doing is trying to legislate from maybe from the shoulder to the knee, and that's really, at that point, you're putting a football player in an impossible position, because, you know, how do you expect a DB to tackle a guy like an Earl Campbell coming around the corner? The only thing he can do is go for the legs.
Yeah.
So injury, unfortunately, is a part of this game, John, but the way Gronk got taken out. In other words, I was watching it with my son, and we almost just couldn't look at it anymore.
Right.
Because, you know, the minute he was hit, you knew, obviously you didn't know ACL, MCL, but you knew that knee was blown up.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's terrible because, you know, you look at a guy like Gronkowski, and he's sort of like a Randy Moss type guy in that he is a 1-in-20-year kind of a player. In other words, you see a player of his ability once every 20 years. The negative with Gronk is, unlike a Randy Moss, he's going through so many different surgeries, and he'll never have the health that will allow him to be in the record books the way he could have been, because not only has he been unlucky, but his style of play, running high and never yielding to tackles, would only, this was inevitable whether it was on that hit or another hit. I think Gronk's style kind of lended to him possibly being injured because he does absorb too many blows. So I'll hang up and listen to you, John, but thank you again. You're doing a great job.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Patrick. And you make some very good points. I really don't know that you can legislate this away. I kind of alluded to that earlier, said that earlier, and I kind of agree with you. I don't really think there's anything you can do. Even if you said, okay, you're only allowed to hit between the shoulder and the, and above the knee, you're not going to be able to effectively bring down that built low to the ground, you know, choo-choo train of a running back like Earl Campbell was. And by the way, there's another one of those type of backs that's coming out this year. I mentioned his name last week here on the program. I got a new favorite running back that I'd really love to see in a Patriot uniform, and that's Andre Williams from Boston College. He's very much like Campbell was back in the 1970s and 1980s. Very much. Big thighs, built low to the ground, will run through you as well as by you and past you. Physical runner. He makes defensive backs run the other way. How do you bring a guy like that down? You have to cut him as low as you possibly can and hope that they can't keep their balance. And that's really what T.J. Ward did on that play. It just so happens that, you know, he was aiming for a general area, and it just so happens that his helmet and his pads, and it was a catastrophic hit. He didn't go into that hit thinking, I'm going to take his knees out. I don't think any player does that. I really don't. The game is way too fast. The game is way too impactful for anybody to say, I'm taking that son of a gun out, I'm going for his knees. It's just not going to happen. You could sit there and try to take out somebody's knees, and it's not going to happen because you're not going to get the exact chance. I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. The speed of the game is way too great for something like that to be calculated. He just decided to go for an area. I'm aiming low. And it just so happens where he was aiming and where Rob's knee was running happened to be one and the same. And you saw what happened. And this just does happen. And I just don't know. I don't know that the NFL can legislate its way out of this. It legislated itself into it, as I said already. And you certainly do have the NFL to thank for some of that. But I don't know how you fix the problem. You can fix one problem, and then you're going to have a whole other set of problems to fix after that. See, if you try to correct this one, then you may go back, you may have to go back to, you know, having to protect quarterbacks again. And again, what are we doing here? Are we trying to make this game tag? Are we trying to make this game flag football? Are we going to put skirts on our quarterbacks? I mean, you know, of course I'm being facetious here, but you know what I'm saying. I've heard people already talk about with the issue of concussions and the issue of the violent injuries and the way the players are getting bigger, stronger, faster, that in the next 20 to 30 years, the NFL isn't going to be the NFL like we see right now. Frankly, I think they're all right. The game that we see 30 years from now, I don't think it's going to resemble much of what we see right now. And why is that? It's not because the NFL is going to legislate itself out. It's because guys are going to stop playing. Guys are going to come into the league. They're going to get paid hopefully for them, a good sum of money, 2 or 3 years, suffer one catastrophic injury and say, whoop, that's it, I'm out. I'm not doing this anymore. Especially when you see more and more instances of veteran NFL players, and by veterans I mean guys that played in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, who are now debilitated. Campbell's a great example. Man can't walk. He's crippled. How about the guys with head injuries, suffering from the chronic brain injury syndrome? like even the one that, that caused Junior Seau, we think, to take his own life. I mean, this kind of stuff's going to keep happening. And I know that, you know, they came to an agreement and a settlement with the players' union, you know, the retired players for extra benefits and all that, but, you know, it was just a drop in the bucket. It was just a drop in the bucket, what they probably could have held out for. And I think somehow, some way, this is going to continue to persist, and you know, the NFL may end up having to legislate itself out of business. Because you're going to have some wrongful death lawsuits start to crop up out there. I don't see anything good for the future of football here, not like we see it now. This is going to take somebody that's really forward-thinking and a borderline genius to fix this problem. I don't know that Roger Goodell is that person. Here's Felix in Houston. Felix, you're in the playbook. Hello, Felix.
Can you hear me,
John? Barely.
Okay.
How about now? Try it again.
Yeah. Is that better?
Yeah, that's a little better. Just make sure you're up close to your speaker.
No, yeah. It's my first time calling. Can you hear me fine? I'll go ahead and go.
Yeah, it's really, really low. Are you talking on a mobile app?
Gonna have to get rid of you, Felix. Call back when you can, keep us off speaker.
Okay? Because the speakerphone isn't gonna work. So try to get us back. That was all the way up, right? We couldn't hear it. So, yeah, unfortunately, it's great if we were having a personal conversation, I could probably do it, but, you know, it doesn't translate well to others hearing it. So, apologize for your first time to call the program that it would turn out like that, but try to give us a call back and then see if you can go directly on the phone, and then we'll go that route. And there is a toll free number. So even if you're on a cell phone, as long as you're not hampered by your minutes, 855-PATS-500 is the number you can call, and it'll ring right through, and then we pay for the call. All right, let me get some of these other emails in here, because I did see some good points that were made today, as we usually do here on the program. Michelle in PC, Florida says, with Gronk's size, though, did he really have to go that low with Gronk and hit his size? You know, Michelle, I can only tell you that the answer to that would be yes. He's trying to aim for a general area, and having played a little defensive back of my own decades ago, really all you can do is you kind of figure it's a matter of geometry. Guy's coming at you. You know where he's traveling. It looks, you got the plane figure out what he's traveling. So you're just trying to hit the biggest area you can. And knowing these defenders, knowing that they can't go high, because that's probably the safest area. But you can go high for fear of, you know, targeting with your helmet or hitting somebody in the head and them getting a concussion, which we know that the NFL has legislated largely against. The only choice for you to go is low. So did he have to go that low? I would say, yeah, he did. He didn't really have any choice. The NFL basically said, you got to go low. Brandon says, referees are what it takes to beat the Pats. We could and should be 12-1. As for what the NFL and the Super Bowl needs is the Pats, the only team capable to beat Seattle in inclement weather. That's interesting, although I would also agree with you. To the extent that I think the Patriots would be the perfect foil for Seattle in cold weather in New York. Brian. Sorry, John, I had to respond to this comment from Paul at the end of PFW. I'll take your thoughts on it also. Paul said or insinuated that if you outlaw hits to the knees along with hits to the head, plus the horse collar, there's no place left to tackle. He must be the most ridiculously constructed human on the planet. All heads, knees, and shoulders. Is he some sort of mutant abomination? Should we save this one for him? Kev, what do you think? Take Gronkowski as an example. 6'6 tall, his head, knees comprise, let's be safe and say, about a foot and a half of his overall height. That leaves 5 freaking feet of space to tackle. And unless you're some torso-less abomination a la Paul, there's plenty of room left for tackling. I don't want to see football turned into a touch game, but there's got to be a happy medium between the head and the knees for tackling. Well, Brian in Essex, Vermont, thank you for the email. I can't disagree. But based on what I said previously is that, you know, this is a game that is a matter of split seconds and you have to aim to sort of generically, because I don't think that a guy can specifically target unless, of course, you know, it's obvious. And by obvious, I mean, you know, someone's lurking and he's aiming low. And I think what you're leading to here, in fact, the irony of ironies here is that by telling guys you can't go high, you are specifically forcing defenders to target at the knees. because they're aiming low at a shot that will take a player off of his feet, and that's the only one that'll do it, unless somehow you can trip the guy, and then sometimes that's not even clean tackle. So I think the NFL has sort of outsmarted itself, outwitted itself, in an effort to get guys from targeting the head and the shoulder region. Now you forced them to target the knees. I would say in theory, Brian, you're right, that you should aim at the waist. But if you're off by 6 inches, high or low, what if an official throws a flag? Can you see where we're going here? You aim 6 inches low, you're talking about maybe mid-thigh, and then that could be construed as a knee hit. Are we really going to nitpick hits on slow motion replay for officials to look at and say, okay, that's a target, that's not a target? I don't know that we can do that. Something has to be done, but I don't know that we can do that. He says, I think it's fairly clear, honestly, Brady's not been himself this year, which may or may not be because he doesn't have his QB coach anymore. Isn't this his first full year without him? Yes, I think it was. Actually, he's been a little over that, I think. Their offensive line has had serious, serious troubles this year. The draft picks haven't panned out as much as we'd hoped, and the injuries they've suffered are simply irreplaceable. Yes, the offensive line has definitely been down. It has not played up to the potential that we thought it was capable of this year. I will certainly give you that. And it's only been, you know, exacerbated by, you know, Sebastian Vollmer's absence. He says they could patch things up and make do for a time, but losing a player nearly every game and a very key player at that has taken its toll on a defense that was really looking good at the beginning of the year. And with Amendola hobbled, Gronk out, plus Ridley's fumbling, the whole team is really just hanging on for dear life. Crap happens, I guess, but I think this year is over for the Pats. I don't think they can win a shootout. I don't think the defense can make stops consistently to help them win low-scoring games. It was a great year, but hugely costly. I'm just hoping Gronk recovers fully. As far as the comeback against the Browns without Gronk, it's the Browns. The Pats were supposed to murder them. I don't consider a come-from-behind win by 1 point anything to write home about against a team you were supposed to crush. Time to start planning for next year, in my opinion. Woo! Well, I thank you for your honesty, Brian. I don't know how many Pats fans share your opinion, but I thank you for your honesty. Josh from Stratford, Connecticut. I just wanted to say all this talk from these people about the season being over now is crazy. Now, if it was Brady out with an ACL, then I'd say, okay, throw the towel in. Brady has had crazy come-from-behind wins, leads these rookies and mediocre wideouts to victory time and time again. I'm glad Boyce is out there now. I think Brady takes us to another Super Bowl and beats the Seahawks with rookies, ending all the Brady isn't the best QB talk. I don't think that will ever happen, to be quite honest with you, Josh. But, okay. Sean says, I watched the Patriots-Browns game on CBS. It was another incredible game that will go down as a comeback for the ages. I am a bit perplexed about one of the Cleveland Browns offensive players. I know the QB was 17, Jason Campbell. He was brilliant. I'm very familiar with his career. He was a first-round draft choice in 05 for the Washington Redskins, was also with the Raiders, last season a backup in Chicago. Browns have a really good tight end in 84, Jordan Cameron, selected in the fourth round in 11. The real mystery is Campbell. I did not see another Campbell on the field, but I know he must have been there because Steve Tasker mentioned his name five times. Jordan Campbell, he says. Yeah, it's Jason Campbell.
He kept confusing the quarterback and the tight end.
He did. And by the way, let me just say this. I have heard numerous complaints about Don Kroenke and Steve Tasker.
On defense, Thomas, Bruschi, and Colvin.
Bruschi.
Was it Logan Ryan or Ryan Logan? Yeah, I heard that was a bad one for him.
Yeah. I like him personally. He's a nice enough guy.
He's the man, and he was a legend, but he's just lost his fastball a little bit.
And that's, I think when you lose the fastball, I think it's time to go. It happens to pitchers all the time in the sport of baseball. Happens to players, and happens in every sport. Needs to happen to announcers, too. Cincinnati Bengals brought in an undrafted rookie free agent linebacker this season by that name, but he was cut in August. Did he switch to fullback or receiver? Was quietly signed with the... Okay, I think I get it, Sean. Thank you. Sean of Vancouver.
By the way,
yes.
If announcers have to go that way, too, is it my job to put you out to pasture and wheel you out of here when the time comes?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'll just have to add that to my responsibilities chart back here. Put John in a good home when the time comes.
That's exactly right.
Austin and I will come visit you.
Make sure the drool bucket is firmly placed under chin.
Austin and I will come bring you some cranberry bread from time to time.
As long as you can get Robin to make it. She's the one who's going to be holding the drool bucket. Stephen Killeen says, John, yes, I'm happy with the win, as is all of Pat's Nation. I'm going to try a glass half full, the situation with Gronk going down. In my mind, Julian Edelman, Vereen, Boyce, and the other Wookiees step up and have to catch everything TB12 can throw their way. Yeah, Julian Edelman, Minitron. I like that. Who stuck the Minitron nickname on him?
Not sure. It's the first time I've heard it.
He calls Julian Edelman Minitron.
I like that, though.
That's pretty good. It's pretty good. Edelman has had a Megatron type of year, but you can't really call him Megatron. He just seems to make all the tough catches. That's good. I like that. Steve, I may have to give you credit for that one. Minitron. I like it. The defense has to stop the third and long conversions, which would be my small nit for the week. I mean, yeah, there's an obvious one, right? There's an obvious one. Third and 17? And the freaking Cleveland Browns are throwing for 20 yards? Come on. Third and 17? How do you not defend third and 17 against a 4-8 football team? Good gosh almighty. It's criminal is what it is. It's criminal. TB12, he says, needs to find the laser scope and get the passes where they can be caught. That was my nitpick in the opening hour here. Without a doubt, the sledding now is not only hard but uphill. However, we've seen the Patriots team do much more than we've expected. This year stands as it stands. It can be included in the list of more with less, without a doubt. And my final nit would be stupid penalties that keep drives that should have been shut down alive. Very good, Steve. That's an excellent email all the way around. Dave in Monterey, California. John, I've been arguing with some of my buddies for a long time about Brady. I say that Brady is overrated. I do not deny that he is a talented NFL QB. I'm not saying that I want a different QB. I'm simply stating that he's not as great as people say he is. My buddies, who are Broncos and Giants fans, disagree. They argue that with 2 minutes left in the game on the line, who would I want as a quarterback? So this is where my nitpick comes in. I am a fire captain in California. If I go to a house fire and do a bad job, the fire spreads to the next house. Eventually, with hard work, adjustments, and better overall performance, the fire will go out. My argument is, if Tom is so great, why are they in these last-minute comeback situations in the first place? If Tom is so great, he would play great from the beginning of the game, not have to scramble at the end of the game to save the house. My nitpick is with Tom Brady. He is talented, but cannot come out of the gates ripping accurate passes to all receivers. He needs to be behind or up against the wall before we get his A game. I wish somebody would light a fire under his ass when they come out of the tunnel. Can we give Dave proper credit for this one? I think Jim Rome would say, racket! Can we give him a buzzer or a ding, ding, ding or something like that? Spot on, Dave. Spot on commentary.
Where was Dave from?
Monterey, California.
Okay.
I can't even comment because there's nothing left to say. He said it all. I'm going to read it again one more time for those of you who need, to get a clue. My buddies, who are Broncos and Giants fans, disagree. They argue that with 2 minutes left and the game is on the line, who would I want as a quarterback? Okay, we can all pretty much agree on that, right? Dave continues, this is where my nitpick comes in. I am a fire captain in California. If I go to a house fire and do a bad job, the fire spreads to the next house. Eventually, with hard work, adjustments, and better overall performance, the fire will go out. So my argument is, if Tom is so great, why are they in these last-minute comeback situations? If Tom is so great, why he would play great from the beginning of the game and not have to scramble at the end of the game to save the house. My nitpick is with Brady. He's talented but can't come out of the gates ripping accurate passes to all receivers. He needs to be behind or up against the wall before we get his A game. I wish somebody would light a fire under his ass when they come out of the tunnel. That's good, Dave. That may be email of the year right there. Dear JR from Terrence in Long Island, your caller is wrong. You can absolutely be injury prone. You made a good point about his style of play making him prone to injury. But people can also have weak connective tissue and other physical differences that make them more prone to injury. 110% correct, Terrence. You can be injury prone. You absolutely can be. Style of play is the leading cause of being injury prone. Now, weak connective tissues or soft muscles or not being physically or adequately prepared, that can also make you injury prone. I think we all know that. But most of these guys at the NFL level are not like that. They're physically prepared. The main way that you can be injury prone in the NFL is because your style of play dictates it. That's the problem inherent within Rob Gronkowski. His style of play dictates it. Marvin in Kernersville, North Carolina. John, I totally agree with you about Tom and your nitpick. I would also add Josh to part of the problem. We were moving the ball in one series in the second quarter with Blunt slamming the run down their throat, and then we have to get too cute for our own good and try to hit a home run, and whiff, this just killed our momentum. So part of my nitpick goes to Josh as well, McDaniels, of course. But my number one nitpick was in the third quarter, down 14. We had the Browns, 3rd and 17 at the 40, and we let them get it. Did I not just mention that? I think I did. This is Cleveland, he says, with a third-string quarterback. Really? This is Cleveland. I mean, this was the key point in the game at the time, and we can't get a stop with this defense. Not to mention that we let them come back down the field to try the field goal on the last play of the game. This is the bigger problem going forward. This defense just cannot get off the field on third down. I don't know how we can fix this now, so John, as Bill always says, it is what it is. We've got some great callers here. Got some great calls and some great emails here today. This is good stuff, people. Really good stuff. Dave says, John, after watching football this weekend, I found the solution to all the stupid Goodell rules that are ruining football. Get rid of domes. Football is a grinded-out, tough-guy game. Over the last decade and a half, NFL owners have purchased big and faster players. They have purchased big and faster domes. If it's snowing or raining or just plain cold on the field, the game will slow down a bit. That, in turn, will reduce the high-speed impacts that cause concussions and such. It'll go back to the old wrap-up-and-drive tackling. It will reduce the low hits as players will again start to wrap up and drive. I'm not saying injuries will go away, but smooth, perfect playing surfaces versus in early season football game on a baseball field, bring back the elements. You know, Dave, that's an excellent point. I think this is the same Dave from earlier. It looks like the same email address. I think we need to invite him on as a co-host. He's made two excellent points today. I've never liked dome stadiums. I know why they've built dome stadiums, because, you know, clearly you want to try to cater to the fans, but football is a sport made to be played outdoors in the elements. And, you know, as John Facenda once said on NFL Films, and that's what the sport is. And we're always going to have catastrophic injury in this sport because of the physical nature, the violent collisions that are there. But I think you're right. Sometimes the game speeds up in the domes, and it's just not football. It's arena ball.
Well, I agree with all of that, but... No, I was going back to more. My head perked up when you said, let's invite him on as a co-host.
Oh.
Call in, sure, but the Rook is a one-man wolf pack. I mean, Eric's an uninvited guest who just kind of just sticks around, wants more airtime.
Wow. You going to play that back for Eric tomorrow?
Sure. The Rook, from what I've seen out in the wild, outside these four walls, is a one-man wolf pack. He hunts alone.
I hunt alone. I'm not sure what that means, but all right. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin, for your support. This one comes from Donald in Japan. Donald, thanks for having us today. He says nitpicks would be third downs.
It's my gong.
Wow. Nitpicks would be third downs. All season on both offense and defense, we're either letting up on third downs and not getting off the field, or we can't convert our own. They really need to come together on those downs. Correct, you would be. Third down, that's a huge one. That's good enough for my third nitpick of the day today. As far as the lower body injuries versus head injuries, just like every sport, you have to protect your assets. That's just good business sense. But we are at the point where the players are bigger and faster than ever. Well-trained, almost bred, just to play the sport. I think they need to get rid of the hard-cased pads, particularly the helmets and the shoulder pads. They're far too hard and are used against players nowadays. I think if you had to feel more of the blows, you would have less injuries. but it seems like the old leather pads would almost be better for them now, and it gives some protection, but you won't be getting knocked out when you drop your head going into a pile and meet it with shoulder pads. Says, love the show. Listen every week when I'm not on the boat. Happy holidays to all of you. I assume it looks like this is a naval address, but he's in Japan. Thank you, Donald. Some interesting points that you bring up. I think that's part of the reason why there was a pad adjustment made, if I'm not mistaken. I believe there was a pad adjustment made in the NFL for this season, where they're making certain pads mandatory, and other pads were, I don't know if they were outlawed, but I think they were discontinued. I'd have to look into that, but I believe there was a move made like that. Some interesting points, though. But we can't go back to softer stuff. If you go back to softer stuff, then you're going to have more bone-on-bone and more head-on-head injuries, and then you're going to have people not get up from the field, literally. Not get up. Ever. Steve says, the issue with how old-school guys like me were taught to hit center mass between the numbers was the head would naturally come up and catch someone on the chin. Regardless of the move, regardless of if the move was intentional or not, it would happen. Guys would have their bells rung as a result because they would be taking an upcut to the chin. In the case of Ward and Gronk, physics comes in. There's no way a guy like Ward could take Gronk heads up because he would be standing on the tracks as the train would be coming through. We could all look at the plays with Gronk carrying about 1,000 to 1,500 pounds of men over the goal line. The NFL's intention is good regarding player safety, but the implementations can't work given the violent nature of the game with bigger, stronger, faster players entering the league each year. The change will happen when teams push back as more blue-chip players akin to Gronk get taken out. Interesting, Steve. I don't know, though, when the teams, though, would capitulate here and start taking players out. The rules are the rules. They're going to go out and they're going to try to recruit as such, and they're going to get bigger, stronger, faster in order to be able to withstand the punishment that's coming from the defenders. I just don't know that the teams will ever push back. Now, it may very well be that we get to the end of, say, next season, and 20 of the 32 teams have lost quarterbacks, 25 of the 32 teams have lost running backs, and a whopping 30 of 32 teams have lost at least one wide receiver. Then you might hear a hue and cry, you know, to the NFL saying, we need some help here. We don't have anybody that can play. And I think, and I mentioned this earlier this year, I think when the first spate of injuries happened to Will Fork and Mayo and Kelly, and I'll mention it here again, that I think the one way that you can perhaps make some amends to correcting this problem in the league is by allowing 53 players to go every week. In other words, do away with your practice squad. Increase the depth. I think that would be a very small price for the owners to play, to pay the players a game check as opposed to a practice squad check or an ineligibility check. Because if you have extra players ready to go, the chances are they're going to be game ready. You're going to hopefully attract a little bit better quality player in terms of the depth that you need and a guy who's game ready to play. That might be one way to approach it. And to fix some of the issue, it certainly would help the depth issues. Not going to help the tackling or the targeting issues. This one comes from Flint in Atlanta. John agreed, not one of Tom's better games. To me, it's his footwork. When he gets lazy with his feet, he misses. He needs to get his feet right and step into his throw. Hell, they're going to try to hit him either way. Another nitpick, he says, running the ball to the goal line, down by 12 with no timeouts and just over a minute to go before Edelman's TD. And he says, PSS, I don't know if I've ever seen a year with more injuries. I don't think I have, Flint. But I think this is going to be the rule rather than the exception from here on out, unless we figure out some way to sort of mitigate these problems. And I think increasing the active squad would help. Donald says, I almost forgot to mention, people need to look at the bright side of the Gronk injury. Provided he's not IR'd next year, we should have him for a full playoff run for a change. That is, of course, Donald, if he stays healthy during next regular season because of his style of play. Jeff in Florida, my nitpick is the failure to give the Browns their due. I was led to believe this would be a blowout. Instead, I came away impressed with the Browns, especially Joe Thomas, Josh Brown, Jordan Cameron. Having North Turner helping a competent quarterback doesn't hurt either. I think we saw that, didn't we? Did we not see that? North Turner made Jason Campbell more than a competent quarterback on Sunday. Like I said, Campbell's playing for his career. He might have earned himself a spot on somebody's roster next year. He opened my eyes. The dude can still play. Jeff says many of the local media procrastinators seem to sleep at the wheel. Although the Patriots played poorly, it's good to know they can perform much better, so let's just get it in gear earlier. Well, that certainly seems to be the mantra. Let's get these guys in gear earlier. Brian says, and as I said in previous emails that haven't been read yet, it's very simple. Don't target the head. Don't target the knees. Do you have any understanding of how much of the body that leaves open to hits? You guys act as if the only thing that constructs a football player is the head and the knees, and that's simply an irresponsible view. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit. This defeatist attitude of, oh, there's nothing we can do, is pathetic and simply welcomes the end of the NFL. Because let's face it, players years down the road will eventually sue the NFL for crippling knee injuries just like they do with concussions now. Brian, that's going to happen anyway. That's going to happen anyway. Bill sends this email. He says, it's been reported by Deadspin that Gronk got a concussion anyway on his hit. Yeah, I saw that too. I saw that too. He also suffered a concussion on the injury that took out his knee. John says, OMG, where do I begin? I think it's admirable that Ward apologized to Gronk for the hit. I think it's equally special that he went over to Belichick to say something. And after watching that slow motion replay 200 or 300 times, I don't buy for a minute that it was an accident. I'm sorry, but in a time of the season where we have a huge bullseye on us, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that opponents are out to get us, not just referees. Play calling. We've all taken shots at Josh McDaniels, and rightfully so. Same plays every week, but here's the one that gets me. Why is it that when we're 3rd and 20, we run a 3-yard screen and hope that we can run the other 17? We have Tom freaking Brady, and we can't come up with a play when he can pass it a little further? That's actually a pretty good one. This is a nitpick, not about the game Sunday, but about the overall season of my own selfish homerism. It's certain now that Manning will break Tom's TD record. I know this has nothing to do with anything, but it was nice having Tom own the record for 5 years, only to lose it in a year when Peyton has 10 targets and Tom has 3. Sean says, Tom Brady dubbed Jules Minitron after last week. Vereen Edelman and Josh Boyce will have to step up for us to continue. I didn't even hear that. So I guess Brady's the one that dubbed him Minitron. That's a good nickname for Julian Edelman. John, I hate hearing that Brady's a wimp, afraid to get hit, etc. I disagree. I don't think he's afraid to get hit. I think he doesn't want to get hit because essentially it ends the play. As far as him being not tough, how could people possibly say this when he's getting hit 12 times a game and still standing in there fighting? I didn't say he's a wimp. And I never said he's afraid to get hit. I'm saying he's getting hit too often. Sometimes that just causes you to be somewhat gun-shy and to yank the football when you're trying to throw at your target. That is a reason. Not the reason, but a reason. All right. Lance finally says, did we all watch a different play of this hit? Why are many people thinking this was an unintended outcome of a violent sport? Watch it a few times if you can stomach it. Ward dove directly at the knees without his arms even outstretched. He put his shoulder and helmet into the knee in an attempt to tackle a giant Gronk who would have run for a touchdown after shrugging him off if he attempted to wrap up with a slightly higher tackle. Ward couldn't stop the greatest athlete in the NFL, so he went low. Dove at his legs, not because of the fear of playing for free, a.k.a. fines or rules associated. If Ward wanted to tackle Gronk's upper body, torso, or thighs, he could have tried, but he dove at the legs because he's a sub-200-pound athlete who Gronk would have rolled over and run for a touchdown if he didn't hit him in the lower legs. It's from Lance in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Honestly, can't disagree with that, Lance. I think you bring out an important point. That, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of science. Smaller DBs trying to tackle bigger receivers are left with no choice but to aim low and hope that you can cut somebody down, like chopping down a tree. And that's exactly what happened in T.J. Ward's instance. He cut down a tree, he happened to aim, and that's where he got him. So unless you specifically say you're not targeting the knees anymore, I don't know what you're doing. You're really starting to hamstring your defensive backs. But maybe that's part of the game that needs to be legislated. I don't know. I'm up for it. I'm up for some kind of a suggestion. Mary Beth on Facebook, my nitpick. How can Brady play so poorly for 58 minutes and then good for 2? You were right, though. A win is a win, but where will we be in the playoffs if this type of play is continued? Oh, yeah, I know. I totally get it. Totally understand. Amazing. All right. We've run out of time for today's program. I thank everybody that contributed to the show with your suggestions, your nitpicks, as we always get on Tuesday. Boy, when they come rolling in, they just don't stop, do they? So thank you very much for that. We'll continue the thought process tomorrow. E. Scal will be in studio. We tentatively have scheduled for tomorrow the great Bob Greasy. I hope I didn't let the cat out of the bag.
No, it's okay.
But he's a tentative for tomorrow, so hopefully we'll have the Hall of Famer himself on the program. And I'm really looking forward to this because I've never had the pleasure or the privilege. So I hope that you will tune in for that as well. Patriots Playbook, same Pat's time tomorrow, kids.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.